We're reading this morning from the sixth chapter, the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. I've been attempting very slowly to go through the second canto sequentially. And the system that I've been using is a few verses at a time. There's something of a theme with those few verses, and it connects with the chapter theme, which connects with the canto theme. I've just been trying to do like that with the hopes that I can gradually progress through the whole second canto. The last time I covered the sequential part of second canto was from Labor Day weekend in Vidyanagari. And so chapter 6 is entitled Purusha Sukta Confirmed. It's a commentary on the Purusha Sukta prayers from the Rig Veda by Vyas. It's not literally taken. Like, here's a Rig Veda verse, and here's a commentary on this verse. Not like that. It's done in narrative form. The speaker is Lord Brahma. The listener is Narada, his son. And the subject of Purusha Sukta prayers are being covered in the course of that dialogue. The Purusha Sukta prayers are describing the spiritual world and the expansion of the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world as the Purusha avatar. Mahavishnu, Garbhadaksha Vishnu, and Shiradaksha Vishnu are the Purusha avatars, the three. And the relationship between them and the spiritual world and the function that they perform on behalf of the Supreme Lord of the spiritual world, who they are expansion of in this material world, performing the function of creation, how that works, the part that Brahma plays in that creation. So it's simply expanding the meaning of those very tight verses of Rig Veda. So in effect, it's a commentary on Rig Veda. Purusha Sukta prayers. Purusha Sukta confirmed the title of the chapter. And where we are in the reading, or in the chapter, Brahma has completed giving his explanation of that process of creation as it's described in the Rig Veda. And the last set of verses, he's told Narada, the questions that you've asked I've now answered. Narada had a whole series of questions about, are you not the Supreme Personality of Godhead? You're the Creator. But then I see you meditating in it. Who are you meditating upon? Does that mean that there's someone greater than you that you're meditating upon? And in this process of creation, are these energies not your own energies? Or do these energies come from some other source? What about your ability to create? What about the plan? What's going on? So what's your relationship with creation? So he, to answer his question, he refers to or gives an explanation of Purusha Sukta prayers in his own way. So that's where we ended. We'll just read the last few verses. I've created this Brahma, the sub-creation. The Supreme Lord, according to the Purusha Sutra prayers and the Bhagavatam, performs what's called sarga, and then Brahma performs what's called visarga. Sarga is everything is supplied and then Brahma does it. Like chief engineer. You're going to build something. So he's got all the mechanical engineering and civil engineering and electrical engineering. He's got all, he's the professor of all those departments. He oversees it by his own potency. So he's invested with that potency, he's invested with the plan, the ingredients, creative energy, self-realization, everything is set up from the unmanifest state to the manifest state. Okay, Brahma, go to it. And then he does the sub-creation. So he's now, he's just ending his discussion saying, the sub-creation, I create this, and I create that, and that, and this, and that, and that. And that's what Narada sees, but then he says, know that all of that is sub-creation of the principal creator. I'm a cause of creation, but I'm caused. I'm the effect of a prior cause. Thereafter, the Manus, the father of mankind, the great sages, the forefathers, the learned scholars, the Daityas, and mankind perform sacrifices, just as I perform sacrifice, they in turn perform sacrifices meant to please the Supreme Lord. All the material manifestations of the universes, plural, are therefore situated in His power, His powerful material energies, which He accepts self-sufficiently. So you thought I was Swarat, He's Swarat. And these are His material energies which He manifests, and everything is situated in those energies of Him. Although He is eternally without affinity for the material modes. Prabhupada's comment is, in addition to who is supreme and where does this all come from, another question that Narada had, Narada asked Brahma, by what strength and by what mechanism does all this stay in its manifest state? So he's just explained. Supreme Lord expands that energy and then He sustains everything within that energy, which means when He withdraws that energy, everything is also withdrawn. But creation, maintenance, and dissolution, they're in His hand. Others are agents of creation, agents of maintenance, agents of dissolution. But it's all happening by His energy. And He says it explicitly. This was the last verse that we covered in Gita 100. By His will, I create, nor Shiva destroys, and He Himself, in His eternal form as the personality of God, it maintains everything. He is the powerful controller of these three energies. So there are categories of avatars. There's avatars. And there's categories of avatars. One of the categories of avatars is guna avatars. So the guna avatars preside over certain of the gunas, and the potency to do so comes from the Supreme Lord. So Brahma is saying, I do this creating thing, but that potency for that comes from the Supreme. When Shiva does the destroying part, that comes, energy comes from the Supreme. And the maintenance part, He expands Himself and He does it, the maintenance Himself. But it's His potencies in all three places. That's where we ended. So, the three verses for this morning start with text 33 in chapter 6. So it starts Itti. He's now doing, this is the summary of conclusion part of the whole chapter. Therefore, or thus, my dear son, whatever you inquired from me, I have thus explained unto you. And you must know for certain that whatever there is, either as a cause or as effect, both in the material and the spiritual worlds, is dependent upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, this is the language varies, but the Vedic language, which indicates that cause which has no cause, or the cause of all causes, Sarva Karana Karana, Prabhupada quotes that verse from Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchit Ananda Vigraha, Anadir, Adir, Govinda Sarva Karana Karana, Anadir, Adir. He's without beginning, and he is the beginning. He's the source of all things, Sarva Karana Karana. So, rhetorically, people ask the question sometimes, if God created everything, who created God? And it's just a rhetorical question. Because, by definition, that from which everything else comes has no origin. Because if there was something from which that came, that wouldn't be the original source of all things, or the absolute truth, with capital A, capital T, absolute truth. The Vedas are searching for that absolute truth. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. The first aphorism of Vedanta Sutra is Jigyasa, inquiring into the absolute truth. And the absolute truth is then in aphorism form identified as Janma Yasya Yataha, that from which everything takes its Janma, comes into being. And that which comes into being may be the cause of another something that comes into being. There's that which is an effect can downstream become a cause of another effect, which becomes the cause of another effect. And very practically, that's how the creation works. There's a cause that brings about an effect, which means it's technology. Technology is, we go reverse. Something over here, when moved, makes something over here move. And then that something over here moves, makes something over here move. You discover how that cause and effect chain works, and you've got a program of technology. Whatever it might be. Electrical, electronics, and communications. And it's just cause and effect, chains. So, Vedanta, or the Vedas, are pursuing what is that cause from which all other things are caused, and itself has no cause. And that's what Brahma is saying to Narada. I'm a cause, Lord Shiva is a cause, and Lord Vishnu is a cause, and there's the original cause of those causes. And that applies to the spiritual world as well as the material world, because in the Purusha Sukta prayers, it does speak of the spiritual world. It speaks of the spiritual world as the three-quarters portion. And this realm is the one-quarter portion. And it compares and contrasts what are the qualities of that three-quarters portion and what's one-quarter portion. Now, the spiritual world doesn't have the same energy working, so it's not, there's no matter. there's no material ingredients, there's no modes of nature, still there's a primordial cause. And so in the context of chapter 6 here, Canto 2, Brahma is disclosing Krishna is the cause of all causes, not me. I'm doing something with the energy derived from him. It's a short purport. Prabhupada quotes these two, the Brahma Samhita, Ishwar Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadi Adya Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. And he also quotes Bhagavad Gita 10.8. 10.8 is the first of the chapter sloki verses of Bhagavad Gita. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matak Sarvam Pravartate Iti Matva Bhajante Ma Bhuta Bhava Samandita. So that's a disclosure. Krishna is disclosing first person singular that he is the absolute truth. Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. And he says it reverse order. Matak Sarvam Pravartate. Everything comes from me. I'm the source of everything. Just saying in reverse sequence. So he is the absolute truth. And in the case of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is just declaring it. In the case of Brahma Samhita, Brahma is declaring it. In the case of the Bhagavatam, Brahma is declaring it. It's like in the after this disclosure by Krishna, then Arjuna declares it. Param Brahman, Paradhama, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavam, Purusham, Shastatam, Divyam. So, but then he declares, it's not this isn't just my opinion because I'm your friend, I'm flattering you. This is the great personalities in all of existence have declared the same. It is you. So, now, next very important verse is why should we believe what Brahma says? What's his credential? What university did he go to? What degree does he have? What's the basis of his authority? So then the next verse states the basis of the authority to someone speak definitive truths. What's the qualification? He says, "Oh Narada, because I have caught hold of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari with great zeal, whatever I say has never proved to be false, nor is the progress of my mind ever deterred, nor are my senses ever degraded by temporary attachment to matter." This is in the second canto for good reason. Brahma is the original personality in one of the primary sampradayas. According to Padmapuran, there are four principal sampradayas, and one of them is from Brahma, another is from Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, the Kumaras and Rochiva, sampradayas, each follow these four. Our disciplic line comes from Lord Brahma, so it's particularly important. What's Brahma's credential? Because there's two things that are happening. There's Brahma, he's just speaking truths. Then there's Narada who receives those truths and he broadcasts those truths, but he's dependent upon getting it from Brahma, because before he got it from Brahma, he was thinking something that wasn't right. Although he's Narada, highly qualified person, but dependent upon the qualification of Brahma. So, Brahma karma's qualification as being the receiver and original speaker, Adi Kavaye, of the knowledge of the Bhagavatam. Very important. So I'm tempted to read the first four. It's long. Read segments from it. Prabhupada begins. Lord Brahma is the original speaker of Vedic wisdom to Narada, and Narada is the distributor of transcendental knowledge all over the world through his various disciples like Vyas and others. The followers of Vedic wisdom accept the statements of Brahmaji as gospel truth. A Christian term, gospel truth, because he has his audience, he has the world, people that are largely influenced by Christian thought, and so the gospel truth. And transcendental knowledge is thus being distributed all over the world by the process of disciplic succession from time immemorial since the beginning of creation. Brahma was the first broadcaster. Lord Brahma is the perfect liberated being within this material world, and any sincere student of transcendental knowledge must accept the words and statements of Brahmaji as infallible. And then there's why. Why should they do that? Vedic knowledge is infallible because it comes down directly from the Supreme Lord unto the heart of Brahma, and since he is the most perfect being, Brahmaji is always correct to the letter. And this is because Brahma is a great devotee of the Lord who has earnestly accepted the lotus feet of the Lord as the supreme truth, or as the verse says, that he caught hold of the lotus feet of the supreme Lord with great zeal. This eagerness, anukantya vata, dṛtaḥ. Small thing, but very important thing. The eagerness, or the earnestness, or the effort that one, the enthusiastic effort that one applies to the process of devotional service, is very telling. Provides a strong connection. In other words, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yeta mam prapadyante tam stadaiva prajamyaham. As persons approach me, or prapadyante, as they surrender unto me, according to the disposition of heart that we have, Krishna reciprocates. So how eager are we? If it's so-so, then it's so-so. That's the reciprocation that we receive. We're bound. we're a spirit caught in this very embarrassing situation of entangled in matter. And to get out of the entanglement of matter, we have to want our natural position more strongly than we want this. And with great enthusiasm, so that's a qualification of Brahma. It's a qualification that we need to somehow gather together. And that's awakening our strong eagerness for our connection with Krishna, relationship with Krishna. Like the discussion a little bit last night. It's common sense. Complacency and spiritual progress don't go well together. Even complacency and material progress don't go well together. You want to achieve something materially, it doesn't just fall out of the sky. You have to strive for that. Spiritually also, even more, because the fundamental principle of material life is we're captured by the modes of nature. And to get, as is Brahma, free from that influence, he's under the Lord's direction. This creative potency that he has is directly, it's not like a conditioned soul, it's directly he's empowered by the Supreme Lord to create. Otherwise, there'd be a lot of mistakes. We don't find a lot of mistakes. We find things moving amazingly with sophistication and detail that the brilliant scientists are possibly trying to pick it apart and find the cause and effect, how it works, so they can earn a living and make things with their technology. But Brahma already made those things. I marvel at how material science, the researchers, are simply seeing how things work in material nature, trying to extract that principle and replicate it in some form or fashion so they can have a product that can then sell and market it, and that's how they earn their livelihood. What's going on within the whole field of nanotechnology and so on? It's just, you know, what's already going on? And how do you replicate what's going on so that you can do stuff? So, imagine the intelligence of Brahma. Even 2 years of research in a lab, or years and years and years of sitting in a, you know, studying something, he just performed his austerities and was bestowed with this incredible intelligence. How to piece it all together? So, he's giving the credit for that accomplishment very explicitly, with earnestness, with great zeal. I captured the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Now you can't, like, it's not like he controlled him, that kind of captured, but with submission unto the lotus feet of the Lord. This whole second canto, first and second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, are identified in Padma Purana as the lotus feet of the literary form of the Lord. So we can be zealous and very, very enthusiastic to take shelter of the message of these first two cantos of the Bhagavatam, and we'll have achieved the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And in this little section, Brahma is confirming this is how it's done. There must be some thing. As somebody may have eagerness, how can I make money? Because, hey, I've got to have some money. So I spent a lot of time and a lot of energy figuring out how I'm going to make money. So a huge amount of energy should also be expended to appreciate how am I going to approach the Supreme Lord in a humble serving mood, because by so doing, intelligence and happiness will be mine. And otherwise, I'm still involved in this struggle. Daidiniya gunamani mama maya durakina mama evieka pajante maya nitantarantite. Two choices: struggle, slug it out with material energy, or cross beyond the material energy very easily. The qualification of Brahma is identified, and then because of that qualification, his submission and eagerness to approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord in a unmixed serving mood. Later in this canto, when Brahma comes before the personality of Godhead, before even creation. The Supreme Lord offers him a benediction. And Brahma is very smart. He's most intelligent. He asks, he asks a few questions. He asks for a benediction and asks for some questions to be answered. But the benediction he asks is that when I'm doing my act of creation, because and I'm understanding, I'm enthused to do so by you, please protect me that I don't mistakenly think I'm the creator. So any task that we may undertake, it may not be universe creating, but it may be some other task, you know, whatever that task might be, get a job or buy a house or cook a meal or, you know, something, do something. Let us pray to the Supreme Lord that we not fall prey to the misconception that we're doing this under our own strength and prowess and cleverness and ability and intelligence. That's foolish. Intelligence is their abilities that are being given, proof of which, hey, with a snap of your fingers, those abilities are gone. Your ability even to think, to walk, to breathe, whatever capacity one has, like that, it can be taken away. It's something given to us, and so let us use that which is given to us as an expression of devotion unto the person who gave it to us. And let us not fall into this false ego position of thinking, now I'm doing. Just see how nice it is. Whatever. Let us be protected by the Supreme Lord. So, because Brahma has that submission, the next thing that happens is they're freed from the constraints, the clutches of material existence. The devotees are always liberated, but that does not mean that they are impersonal. The Lord is a person eternally, and the devotee of the Lord is a person eternally, because the devotee has his sense organs. Even at the liberated stage, he is therefore a person always. And because the devotee's service is accepted by the Lord in full reciprocation, the Lord is also a person in his complete spiritual embodiment. Now here's the protection part. The devotee's senses, being engaged in the service of the Lord, never go astray under the attraction of false material enjoyment. The plans of the devotee never go in vain, and this is due to the faithful attachment of the devotee for the service of the Lord. This is the standard of perfection and liberation. Anyone, beginning from Brahmaji down to the human being, is at once put on the path of liberation simply by his attachment in great eagerness for the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, the primeval Lord. The Lord affirms this also in Bhagavad Gita. So, why it is that whatever Brahma says is the representation of the Absolute Truth is because the Lord controls his senses. Because the dedication of Brahma is that his senses be in the Lord's service only, the Lord reciprocates by controlling those senses. The senses can never go astray, the mind can never go astray. The go astray means being attracted to something separate from Krishna. What is there that's separate from Krishna? Is there something separate from Krishna? There's nothing separate from Krishna, but if I just hit the delete button, Krishna disappears. Now it appears to be separate from Krishna. Like, so if I'm an atheist or a materialist, the delete button's been hit. God doesn't exist. Or the materialist essentially is not an honest position, you know, to be a religious materialist. And a fair amount of the world is going on in that basis, much to my amazement. That in the rationale often goes something like this. God created, and He gave this world to us to enjoy. So it's our duty to God to enjoy it. So there's something fundamentally missing there. Like, you know, a child being given something by their parents, but if the psychology of the child is there's no sense of that which is given by the parents has a connection to the parents, and then therefore there's a purpose for that something given by the parents, there's something missing. And then that something can be used any old way, or maybe a step higher is at least, you know, so you don't hurt somebody else with that something. Like the program last night, one of the kids is walking around with this gun. It's a plastic gun. But, you know, from time to time you point the gun and zap somebody. There was nothing in it, but it says, is that the purpose of a toy? You know, something you give to your child? If there's something, the whole of creation is given. I had this dispute with my parents. What was it? Yeah, there's a dispute. I didn't intend it to be a dispute. My mother and father, my mother once asked me, why are you vegetarian? It was nice. It started off nice. Just, you know, curiosity. Why are you vegetarian? And my reply was that it's not that their scriptures teach it's not right to take the life of an animal and make the body of the animal your food. And then the reply was, well, what's wrong? In the Bible it says that man is given dominion over the animals, and so what's wrong? And my reply was, when I was little, you had dominion over me. And she understood the implication.
Oh, how can you say that?
And my father got on my case. How can you make your mother so upset? Okay, don't ask me a question. But given dominion over something doesn't mean it's been an object for your exploitation. Given dominion means you take care. You give protection. So because the human form of life is very powerful, at other life forms' expense, we enjoy. And that's the game, right? Exploit and enjoy. That's not, there's something missing. Fundamentally missing. Something fundamentally missing is that something came from another source. What's the intended purpose of that other source? Let me act in a very responsible way towards the purpose of that from which these things have been provided. That's responsible. And then you have harmony. It's called religion. You know, where the laws of God are followed by man. And when man follows the laws of God, it's peaceful for other forms of life, including our own. And if it's not followed, it's terrible. And when it's misconstrued in the name of religion, it's double terrible. People feel justified, religiously justified, to do terrible things. So we have to go back. The Bhagavatam is taking us back to this. Let's do a reality check on all of this. Everything comes from the Supreme Lord, including Brahma, including Brahma's intelligence and his representation of that sequence of things comes from a qualification. And to be a follower of Brahma, we need that same qualification, or cultivate that qualification. So Narada then broadcast, here's how you cultivate that qualification, and the followers of Narada broadcast the same message and try to imbibe that same spirit of searching for the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord with great eagerness. And then we can execute the duties of life in such a way it's beneficial for other living beings and for ourselves. We create a nice society. We're acting like responsible elders within the community of the world's population, not just even human. All this, when the human form of life goes in the wrong direction, all other forms of life downstream suffer, because the human form of life is very, not necessarily physically more powerful than a lion or an elephant or something, but with intelligence, more powerful. We mess up, all other forms of life suffer, and there's accountability for that. Big time. And within the laws of nature. Because we have facility, so we have to be responsible with that facility. Human intelligence. What is this human intelligence meant for? Meant for self-realization. If we strive for that self-realization in a proper, directed way, make that connection with the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, following Narada's teachings of Brahma's realizations. That's what the Bhagavatam is here taking us to. Then we're safe. And how can we know that the words of that the Brahma speaks are as infallible as the Lord's? Because the Lord's words are surely infallible. This is the qualification. Now his whatever I say has never proven to be false, nor has the progress of my mind ever deterred the progress of one's mind. Is when we're attached to Krishna, the mind will always go to Krishna. When you're attached to something, your mind goes to that something. Somebody's a drug addict. Whatever they see in the world is some opportunity to get something so they can get their fix. Or a sex addict, or a money addict, or a thief, or it's just, you know, here's an opportunity to steal. It's just that's in their, whatever their attachment is. Their mind goes there. So in Brahma's case, he's saying because of that attachment to the Supreme Lord, the flow of my mind is undeterred. Nor my senses ever degraded by temporary attachment to matter. How does one overcome this attraction to something material? Is by a higher taste. From drishtvanavartate. By attraction to something that's a greater happiness and a greater pleasure. When you look at that lesser happiness, lesser pleasure, is it a problem? Not a problem. It's not a problem. You overcome the problem of, you know, material life. Attachment to, so cultivation of attachment to Krishna is the way of spiritual life. And there's so many things that we do to help us with that attachment to Krishna. That was the discussion last night. Improving the quality of the holy name is one component is to understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's holy name. If we can somehow appreciate, connect with the transcendental nature of Krishna's name, the material energy disturbance subsides. Life becomes peaceful. It's no longer just a struggle of you against the material energy. You're on the other side of that struggle. So Prabhupada concludes, and I think I'm not going to get as far as I had intended. Text 34, the final paragraph. Anyone, therefore, who is earnestly serious in heart and soul about being in intimate touch with the personality of Godhead, in the relationship of transmittal loving service will always be infallible in words and action. The reason is that the Supreme Lord is absolute truth, and anything earnestly dovetailed with the absolute truth attains the same transcendental quality. Then the last part of the paragraph, he goes the other direction. On the other hand, if the pseudo-spiritualist that doesn't have that connection but speaks platitudes can never hold what truth really is, nor can move others to truth. Any amount of mental speculation on the strength of material science and knowledge without any bona fide touch with the absolute truth is sure to be a mundane untruth and failure, simply due to not being in touch with the absolute truth. Such godless, unfaithful words and actions, however materially enriched, are never to be trusted. That is the purport of this important verse. A grain of devotion is more valuable than tons of faithlessness. On the path of spiritual life, it's important to distinguish truth from illusion. And that which is truth bears certain qualities, as has been described. Just one final comment. The message of Bhagavad Gita says the same things. There's a relationship between the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavatam is the graduate study of the message of Bhagavad Gita. Like Prabhupada gives the example, 2 plus 2 is 4, whether it's arithmetic or calculus or trigonometry or algebra or advanced mathematics. 2 plus 2 is 4. It doesn't change. Similarly, the message of Bhagavad Gita is the basics. Then the Bhagavatam takes those same basics and expands the implication, the explanation, the meaning, the application. So, in Bhagavad Gita, the principle of disciplic succession is stated. In the Bhagavatam here, Brahma is describing how that disciplic succession process came into his existence and how he's passing it on to, in disciplic succession, to Narada. And it's very revealing, because, and it's very important for us, because it's the beginning of the disciplic succession. You know, if this connection is not secure, then how can this one be secure? So, that's something about the relationship of the Bhagavatam with Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavatam is expanding the meaning of so many things. You know, the in Bhagavad Gita, the position of the liberated soul is discussed. Here's a liberated soul describing, here's how it works, subjectively. And it's not pride or bragging. It's the science. And he's understanding, Brahma's understanding, it's not my qualification. It's the Supreme Lord makes my words infallible. I don't even have, you know, my choice is that I only want to serve the Supreme Lord. After that choice, he's directing my mind and senses. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. He's the master, and I'm the servant. And I have no interest other than the master. And therefore he has no interest other than using me as an instrument in his service. And therefore the mind, senses, words, it's all him. And therefore Brahma speaking is the same as the Supreme Lord speaking. He's just transparently transmitting that message. Uniquely qualified soul, and following one who wants to follow that infallible soul has the same responsibility. Minimally, the fidelity of repeating that sound vibration without change, and at a higher position, one's consciousness completely fixed in the mood of loving service to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And that way one's mind can't be deterred in that sense, because the Lord gives that protection. That's how the specific succession works. And therefore one can have faith in that. Better grain of that faith and devotion than tons of faithlessness. This material world, Washington D.C., is a gaudy display of faithlessness. Very impressive. Very impressive. But there's such a degree of faithlessness that in God we trust is now disappearing. Explicitly. Out of the courtrooms, out of the schoolrooms, the day will come and will disappear from our currency. And then what is it that one will trust in? And George Bush we trust. For God. Any discussion?
You mentioned the word Adi Kavaye in the beginning. Can you just tell me?
Yeah, Adi Kavaye. Brahma is the Supreme Lord is sometimes, Brahma is sometimes referred to as Adi Kavi, the original learned person.
Within Kavi.
Kavi.
Poet.
Yeah, learned person, Prabhupada is good. Kavi Raj, Krishna Das. Kavi Raj. The king of many persons. And poets. Teni Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye Muyanti Yatsurayaha. Brahma can understand that which even the suras become Muyanti. Bewildered. And that, so the distinction is in this verse that he's not attracted to material allurements, and the demigods are. That's why the demigods. They want enjoyment, although they're very elevated, pious souls. So that makes them eligible for entrance into the heavenly planets, or becoming presiding personalities in the heavenly realms. They're very qualified, but also materially attracted, and therefore bewildered. Bewildered at times. And Brahma, not bewildered. He's not in the post of a demigod. He's in the post of presiding over that which the Supreme Lord requests him to do, to create this place. Most qualified person. Anything else?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Declared, when you came, lights are just need to be balanced. that is through the detachment for the higher things.
Well, you won't get balance without that. That this balancing thing, that's a byproduct of intelligence. Intelligence is discerning. I can discriminate this from that. So, from intelligence I can understand, I'm spirit soul. With intelligence I can understand I also have urges that are not needs of the spirit soul, but they're there. So, I can just try to like extinguish them, but that's generally not effective. So, with intelligence, I need to regulate and submit them to the regulations of Scripture. Place myself and those urges both under the regulation of Scripture, and then stay in that position. That's where the intelligence is under the authority of Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, and then the mind and senses are under the authority of the intelligence, which is under the authority of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and regulating things. With my intelligence acknowledging that's not really me, at the same time acknowledging that there, with the energy of the Supreme Lord, because of my past involvement with the material energy, it's making its demands. So my realistic assessment is, now the higher taste is on one, that was your question, the higher taste on one level is, I find real happiness in making that connection with Krishna. And in making the connection with Krishna, then I have, there are varieties of choices to make. Let's say, ashram specific choices. Or within that ashram, some further specific choices. How I want to regulate my life. And if we're guided, so there's, you can't stay on that path unless there's a higher taste. It's going to be, you know, all over the road. Depending upon the moment. I'm over here. I'm over there. I'm over here. So that's going to drive you crazy and anybody else around you crazy if you're just all over the place. So the higher taste is to, and with that balance, I'm best, my condition is whatever, and so these are, I can maintain steadiness. This is an important governing principle. Steadiness on the path of devotion. I can maintain steadiness by this much spiritual commitment, and at the same time this much involvement in the material energy in a regulated fashion. Let's say eating or sleeping or, you know, accumulation of wealth or whatever it is. You know, standard of living and whatever it is. Those who are followers of Rupa Goswami, particularly the Bhagavatam as well, but particularly Rupa Goswami, understand that whatever that standard is that allows me to be peaceful and steady, I'm very eager to diminish material involvements. The level or degree of material involvements. Nirvriti Marg, in other words. In fact, that's one of the milestones that I will judge my spiritual progress by is my thirst for the temporary diminishes. My attraction for the eternal increases. And that way, that's another subset of that is when there's a pinch, at, you know, something doesn't go right, or something gets disturbed, or something gets taken away, I remain steady. Something happens. There's something that you're used to having around. Suddenly it disappears. I remember distinct mind is going to this situation. About 5 years ago or so, I was visiting, I had been traveling, and I came back to New York to attend the New York Rath Yatra. And one devotee picked me up at the airport, and he went straight to the Rath Yatra. And he dropped me off, and then he parked his car somewhere in Manhattan. And then he took me home. When I went to take myself out of the car, a couple things were missing from his trunk, like my computer. Someone had broken into the car while we were at Rath Yatra. Computer was gone, something else was gone. And, you know, I didn't become upset. I just thought, I'm never going to leave my stuff in the trunk again in Manhattan. And, you know, just started making arrangements for getting another computer. And I was staying in the same room with Jai Dwaita, sharing my room with Jai Dwaita Swami. And he had just lost the little earplugs that he had spent some money for, because he's losing his hearing. An ear specialist in Manhattan. And he had gone to the Pani Hockey Festival the weekend before, and somehow he lost his earplugs. He told me this. He said, you know, I'm amazed that, you know, how your mind is not, you know, I don't even... If you hadn't told me that your computer was gone, I wouldn't even know. You know, I was so disturbed when my earplugs were gone. But it's easy to replace something like that. You just get another machine and off you go. But you know, you take, and so, but the lesson was, I'm going to take precautions. I'm not going to leave stuff in a car and in the house again. It never happened before that, never has happened since then, but I'm not going to make the same mistake. I'm not going to put it at risk. And then go on. Something. Somebody loses something. Something that you're expecting doesn't happen. Some eruption in the material energy. Somebody explodes, or somebody yells, or somebody, or sustains, somebody just misbehaves, or something. If your happiness is dependent upon the configuration of the material energy, you'll never be happy. Because whatever it is, it's going to change. And so, there's a degree of knowing that, being detached, and then, you know, you know it, but still you're attached. And that's an idea of, you know, recognizing where I'm at, and therefore I need to go for this higher taste program. But you can't stay in that balanced position unless there's genuinely a higher taste. It's not possible. Everyone will have their, you know, threshold, their breaking point. Something's going to be pushed, and you know, one loses it. Even so-called mind-controlled, sense-controlled person will lose it, unless there's that higher taste of the senses being satisfied in the service of the master of the senses, and then that the reciprocation comes. The Lord controls one's mind and senses. You can't pretend it. You can't cosmetically paint it on. It's there or it's not there. So then, in the prior position, there's this regulation. I think that's where your question started. And yes, there has to be some higher taste. At preliminary, at least, the preliminary position is, I should do this. It will be good for me. That much, at least. More than goodness. And the position of devotion is beyond goodness. There's some actual satisfaction. And I can stay in that position of actual satisfaction with much greater force than mode of goodness. Spiritual attraction for Krishna is far more powerful than goodness. Mode of goodness. Mode of goodness is very elastic. We certainly have had the experience of mode of goodness people losing it.
Definitely chanting is the most important, the basics are need for survival. But in day-to-day life, there will be several situations where we are compressed for time. Early morning we have to go, some meetings are there, late night we come. In those situations, how to ensure at least the quality of chanting? Maybe we can skip the reading part of it a day. But chanting should be there and should. But what I am finding is somehow I complete the round, but quality is awfully bad. Only satisfaction is somehow I have done the 16 rounds.
That was the topic last night.
I felt like asking already the time was too much. Yesterday night itself I felt like asking.
Well, what you're bringing up is exactly what the topic was. So, your question is how to ensure quality, and the answer is, when one has that capacity, then there will be quality. One has, so we're in the practicing stage. We're not in the quality stage. That was the message of Paul that was given to Dhammananda. So I guess you can give two levels of answers. One level of answer is, even when we're not pressured with late nights and early morning meetings, the quality is less, you know, the quality is less than quality. The quality is less than what real quality is. So one level of answer is, when real quality is there, we'll have quality chanting, because that's our consciousness. Another level is, if we're striving as best we can, I have strong conviction in this one, that with whatever resource Krishna provides us, we're striving to our best we're submitting to him, we're endeavoring earnestly, just like this quality of Brahma that he's ascribing to himself, that will carry us to that quality position. That is to say, Krishna will orchestrate things or help us make the choices such that we're not those circumstances that you described, the disturbing ones, are reduced or eliminated, you know, socially and occupationally and so on. Krishna will provide us with a situation such that those things are minimized and are eventually gone. Krishna will help us come to that position. That's how practical is faith. It's very practical because there's a certain amount of organizing of things that we can do and preparing that we can do, and then there's reality, and Krishna's in charge of that department, and we're in charge of the department of endeavoring to the best of our ability. But if Krishna sees us very sincerely and consistently endeavoring, he's certainly within his power to arrange things such that we have the external facility for quality chanting. So are we organizing our lives and the best way that we can? Are we showing, demonstrating to Krishna the greatest of efforts of sincerity? I don't think any one of us can say that. And so we find ourselves in circumstances that are trying. But within those trying circumstances, my answer then is, how you apply yourself to those circumstances will determine whether there will be quality chanting or not over a period of time. Within the immediacy of those circumstances, you do the best you can, and you show to Krishna, because Krishna is seeing, you show to Krishna the sincere desire that you have to perform maximum attentiveness. Show that to Krishna on the days that don't have those disturbances. Krishna will help you minimize those days of disturbances and give you the strength, mental and devotional strength, to address yourself to those disturbing days more effectively. You know, it's a relationship. Krishna is very loving, and he'll reciprocate in that relationship with us. That's my
something. I was thinking that when something is being used in Krishna's service and that's taken away, is it always because there's something we're doing wrong?
No.
Or it's just
no.
For dependency?
No. Krishna is very versatile. There's no always in Krishna's book. There's something in our relationship with Krishna that can help us, because Krishna is loving. For some reason, my mind is going to Bhakti Raghava Swami and his missing leg. You know, is it something? And you said, he's able to serve according to the passage of minus one life, the person is vanity. Go, 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 go. There's no, yes, there's, it's will.
and they still start to chant like they have, you know, they have faith in chanting, but they're not able to give up faith. How does this really, like, is this like an ongoing process?
Yes, it's gradual process. So you don't go the other direction saying, gee, I guess since I can't, I still have attraction or attachment to these other habits, I shouldn't chant. That's the wrong thing. I've seen people go that wrong direction. It's the wrong direction. While continuing to chant, one can call to Krishna. You know my heart, you know my circumstance, you know my condition. Kindly assist me. I'm depending upon your mercy. So it's not that you abdicate responsibility for that habit. You just toss it in Krishna's hands. But in making my endeavors, this to reduce, eventually eliminate this other thing, I'm depending upon you. I'm making an endeavor, and I'm depending upon you. And through sincerely calling upon your holy name, may that strength come into my life. And you continue. I was just in Chicago. One man, he said it publicly, so I can repeat it. His name is Bhairav Patel, and he met Prabhupada. Had two exchanges with him. One of them was Bhairav was asking Prabhupada for initiation, but he was honest and said, you know, I have one habit, tea. And he said, you can't give up tea? Well, I've been trying. And so then Prabhupada said, I will give you a name, Bhairav Krishna, but you cannot become initiated until you give up tea. It was years before he gave up tea. So he has that mercy from Prabhupada, but, you know, so by continuing to chant, and other things distracted his attention, but now, you know, he's focused. The principle is you should nurture their faith, and then the application of that principle depends upon the degree of faith that they have. So you may say it's okay. Don't worry. That will come about in time. But so it depends upon the nature of their faith. You may say, come on, you can do it. Another, you know, the principle is nurture their faith. So if that thing is like making them feel so guilty that they're more their attention is going to that thing which is making them feel guilty, it's eclipsing their faith. Then it's, don't worry about it. Krishna is all powerful. Bring your attention to Krishna, and he's all pure and all powerful. Everything impure will, in course of time. Then you can point out to them. Doesn't nurture their faith. You point out to other things that are no longer there. Just by coming in contact with Krishna and his own name and his devotee. So that too will go. That's what nurture their faith. That's what preaching Krishna consciousness means. We're just faith nurturers. And that's how you tackle the intelligence should work. What will help this person's faith become, go to the next level, become stronger, or at least be supported? There's some obstacle standing in the way of that. What can be done to help address that obstacle standing in the way? So that their faith becomes stronger. Thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada, please.